In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for another Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is Ricky Berg, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, along with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, whose career also includes playing with rock greats like Roger Daltrey, Ian Hunter, Paul McCartney, and many others. Ricky is also known as the Recovery Troubadour for his work with those struggling with addiction, and his latest album is called Sobering Times, which features our recent coolest song in the world, Together. Let's give some of that a listen now, and then I'll be back with Ricky on the line for our Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Have you ever found yourself desperate for salvation? Praying in the dark for the light to guide your way. Searching for answers that just lead to more questions. You might need a little help with that dragon you're trying to slay. I used to keep my pain well hidden. As far as you know, I'm fine as fine can be. I never let the world know I was hurting. And that kind of thinking was almost the death of me.
For our Coolest Conversations as a recovery troubadour and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Ricky Berg. How are you, Ricky?
I'm doing fabulous, Manfred. You know what I was thinking? That I owe you a New York egg cream. I remember the last time we spoke for my last record, Clean Getaway. I said, man, when you come to New York, I'll take you down. We'll get you an egg cream.
Well, that's I'm sorry, man. That's been put off a little while here.
You'll get your egg cream, man.
I'll get the egg cream, definitely, and I look forward to seeing you and getting that when we're on the far side of all this nonsense. It's been a pretty rough year. How have you and your family and friends fared?
Well, you know, last March was surreal here in New York because it basically started over here in the United States,
right.
And it was terrifying because the unknown is always terrifying, and look, I look at it, you got three ways to deal with this. You could either, like, curl up in the corner, you can deny it, make believe it's not as bad as it actually is, yeah. Or you can accept and adapt, you know, and get your business done in a different way. So that's, I'm just trying to do that. I'm just trying to remain safe for myself and my family. I'm doing a lot of stuff, as everybody is, on laptops, yeah, and Zoom. I've been doing events, you know, either the recovery events or, you know, rock and roll business. A lot of interviews like this for the new record, Sobering Times. And, you know, here we are. So hopefully there's a light at the end of the vaccination.
Well, you know, when we spoke before, a couple of years ago, I remember our daughters were about the same age. And at that time, you were talking about your gal riding around in the car with you and you guys fighting over the Sirius dial. Does she let dad have his way these days and keep it to the Underground Garage?
Yeah. I mean, it's more like, well, she has her own car now. I don't know if she had it when we talked last, but so she's got her own thing going on in her car. But when we're driving together, you know, I listen to Underground Garage. She definitely would rather listen to Underground Garage than cable news, which, you know, she'll say, like, put on Underground Garage when I'm listening to cable news. but she, you know, she loves it. She knows some of the songs. She knows all the DJs, you know. Oh, here's Palmyra. Cool. You know, here's the bar. Here's Manfred, you know. She's cool. She's all right with it. You know, she won't touch my dial.
Well, that's because, you know,
I, and every once in a while, like I say, oh, yeah, here's what I say. All right, let's put on your dumb music.
I want you to remind us how long you have been clean and sober.
September 25th was 33 years.
33 years. So back in 2017, you released Clean Getaway.
Yep.
Drawing on your let's call it journey with addiction and recovery. Now you're back with Sobering Times,
which
the other album's going to cover themes of dependency and overcoming addiction. You've been sober for a long while, but is this still like a daily struggle?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, emotionally, sometimes it can be. It's the using part of it, the compulsion, the obsession is gone, long gone. Yeah. But I'm still who I am in my brain. So emotionally, sometimes if I don't do the work, you know, that I learned over the last 33 years being in recovery, you know, I sometimes get, you start having feelings of you know, anxiety and fear and especially what we're going through, right? Feeling less than or whatever. You get those things, and everybody gets them, but I think it might be amplified in a little bit with people with addiction issues. But I mean, I look at it like, it's like I have a tool, let's say I have a toolbox of stuff that I was given when I first started this journey, and it's up to me to reach into it and use what I've been given. So in other words, calling other people that are in recovery or helping somebody else that might be struggling with addiction, just reading, you know, reading, going to reading literature, recovery literature, going to online Zoom community support group meetings, which has really been helpful during the this last 8 or whatever months it is, 9 months. Yeah, you just do it. It's just every day is another, you have challenges and then you face them and you deal, you know?
Well, you have to, like when you're writing, putting this album together or the one before that, you have to draw on those experiences. I'm just wondering, is that kind of muse, is that sort of a torturous muse, or is it more like you got a harness on the devil and you got him to work for you instead of him working you over?
Well, I don't have his number in speed dial anymore, so that's for sure. But no, it's not torturous. I mean, not all the stories that I write about are my personal take. I lead recovery music groups at treatment facilities around the country, you know, before this happened. And that's one of the things I miss the most about not being able to travel right now, is taking my acoustic guitar and going to a place in Paterson, New Jersey, and sitting in front of, you know, 70 clients in treatment and singing these songs and watching the expressions change, whether it's, you know, so you see that they're acknowledging, they're identifying with something I'm singing about, or they get upset about, you know, they cry a little bit or they laugh, because not all the songs are, you know, morose about addiction. There's a lot of funny stuff on there too, goofy stuff we did. But and then we have conversations. So like I make mental notes when somebody says something and I said, oh, that'd be a good subject matter for another song. And that's how I write the songs. It's sort of like, I just want people to be able to identify with them, and hopefully it helps. It's like, what's the saying? Play to your strengths, right? So my two strengths are rock and roll, and I guess at this point it's recovery. And well, the songs from Clean Getaway and the songs from Sobering Time both came from me doing these, the need for songs, because I go to these, I lead these recovery music groups.
Right.
And then the second thing that happened is the clients in treatment would say, where do I get this music? How could I take it home? And that's what led to me doing the Clean Getaway record. Then I started to, when Clean Getaway was done and, you know, that business was finished, I sat down on my guitar and I started to try to write a song. And I'm still in that mode where I'm writing stuff about addiction and recovery and hope and stuff. And instead of going, oh man, I gotta write something else. I just went with it. And all of a sudden I had 15 new songs narrowed down. I got a couple of extras, you know, with the bonus tracks or singles. Mm-hmm. And listen, if I put these records out and I didn't get a wonderful response, not only from the rock and roll public, but from people finding me on social media and saying, hey, this really helped me, or you know, I was going to leave treatment early and I heard you sing this song and talk about so-and-so and I decided to stay, or I heard the third song on Sobering Times and you know, that really made me not want to use tonight. I mean, listen, as a songwriter, what better reaction can you get? And as somebody that's in recovery, yeah, I've been given the second chance or third chance, whatever it is. And it's up to me to, it's kind of my responsibility to kind of bring other people along and say, hey man, you don't have to live like that anymore. And as far as my own addiction, well, I mean, the bottom line is I did too much for too long, you know, too often. And luckily I got out before it was too late, but there were people that did more than me. And there were people that, you know, well, lightweights compared to me. The main point is what I was doing was affecting me physically and mentally, and I felt that I was really getting close to running out of dance tickets. I had a couple of physical near misses, and I made a phone call. I reached out to somebody that I knew was in recovery, and you know, she took me to my first community support group meeting, and 1, 2, 3, Bob's your uncle, as the saying goes. And here we go 33 years later. And it's the same stuff happens to you in recovery that it does in regular life in the last 33 years. And I've certainly made 101 errors in judgment, but I haven't picked up a drink or drug. And I just try to help other people. And I have to do it with loud rock and roll. You know, otherwise, I don't think I could do it.
You know, you gave us an idea of when the material for Sobering Times was written. You know, you had the, I guess, the inspiration to keep writing tunes, you know, associated with recovery. But give me an idea about when did you record the album?
I started in 2018. Now, it took 2 years to finish it, but not because it was 2 years continuously. It was just scheduling between mine and the studio. I mean, this is the third record I did with Bob Stander, who owns the studio, Parcheesi Studios out in Long Island. And, you know, he played bass on the record, great musician. But the scheduling, if I look at the dates, it was probably maybe 2.5 months to really do the whole thing. And we had to finish some of the, sort of particulars, like tweaking a little bit of mastering, just little bits and pieces. You know, when you finish a record, you go back and listen to it, and even the order and stuff like that. We had to finish that while New York was in lockdown, and we really did it by phone. So, you know, technology was really on our side, as it is on everybody's right now.
Right.
And I'm happy. Listen, I struggle with, you don't want to be around me when I'm putting a record together at the end. I love the studio part. I mean, I could be in the studio 24/7, putting it in order. Like I really, like my brain's going to explode trying to put it in order. And I always think, you know, wouldn't it be funny if like Abbey Road, they put the songs in a hat and they just picked out the songs for the order. But somehow I doubt that. So getting them in order was like, you know, oh my God. And then luckily you could do it in the old days, right? You kept moving things around, like cutting tape and stuff. Now it's on your laptop. You just keep shifting
right
the songs until it says, yeah, this feels cool. This feels good. Once I had an order, it was like, oh, what am I going to call this? And I swear to you, on my phone, I have probably 70 potential titles. 60 of them were awful and cliched. And then 10 of them that were great, I would Google it and I was like, oh man, there's like 10 albums named this. And then I swear to you, I was on the phone with somebody in the middle of the what was going on here in March. And I said, man, we are truly living through sobering times. And I just went, oh, come on, really?
Right.
Was that easy?
Let's talk about our coolest song in the world this week, Together.
Yeah, big-ass glam song.
Right, right. You were still a teen as glam hit. So yep. You were a big glam fan then, right?
Yeah. I mean, you listen to my records. I'm just going to call them records. I don't care what they're called. I wear my influences on my sleeve. I'm a product of everything I listened to from the ages of like 13, yeah, maybe to 19 or 20. So in there you have the 60s music and late 60s music and all the 70s. I mean, I was a teenager in the 70s. So I grew up on the T-Rex and the Faces and the Stones and the, you know, and a bit of the Beatles there at the end and the Kinks and obscure like English groups like Spooky Tooth and stuff like that. And then those guys taught me from reading magazines who Howlin' Wolf was and Slim Harpo was, you know, right. Muddy Waters. You know, Keith would talk about Muddy Waters. What's that? You know, Wilson Pickett, Joe Tex. So when you listen to my music, there's little bits and pieces of that. That's, I'm a product of all that stuff and I don't try to hide it, you know? So in answer to your question, yeah, glam was part of not only the music I listened to, but when I was a kid hanging out at like clubs, when I was like 16, hanging out at like Max's Kansas City, famous New York rock and roll club. I was wearing like, you know, a velvet jacket and platform boots with lightning bolts going up the sides. And you know what I'm saying? In the dead of winter, you know, you'd come out in a velvet jacket with like a little t-shirt under it with a big star on it. Right. A big, you know, like you could get it in the
very cool
chopped up layered hair, you know?
Yeah. So, the song Together, isn't like one of the things about like a 12-step program, like Alcoholics Anonymous, outside of the belief in this and a higher being thing, is that you're it's important to help somebody. You have to help me out here. In fact, I don't know what, can't recall what the relationship is, or maybe you're sponsoring somebody. But the idea is that if you're helping others, you're taking better care of yourself. Is that the idea?
You got to hit the nail on the head, brother. First of all, I believe that addiction thrives on isolation, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to really keep the lines open, and that's the fellowship of any recovery program, is having phone numbers of other people that are also in the same place that you are. Because somebody's always either gone through something you're going through now, or will go through something. So it's a really back and forth thing. You know, one day you're the dog, one day you're the hydrant, you know? So everybody just kind of leans on each other at different points, and together, the idea from that, I think that was one of the first songs I wrote for this record. And when I wrote, I always start with the music. So I just started playing that riff. I just wanted it to be, straight out, you know, we're in this together. No need to go it alone. I mean, it's like the first two lines.
Yeah.
And then when the record was done, it happened. I put this record out September 25th, which is my, 33rd anniversary. We put it out on our own that day. And it turns out that it's a great song for what we're going through now, because, you know, even though we're all divided right now, on different sides, different teams, maybe, we are all in this together as far as what's going on with the pandemic and everything else. And it's a good message in general, I think, you know. And the music's loud. It's loud, man. When that thing comes in, man, it's loud. I used Tommy Price on this. I used a couple of drummers on this, and I thought Tommy Price, who I played with, the second generation Blackhearts with Kasim Sultan on bass, I thought he'd be the perfect drummer for this song, and it turns out I was right.
Oh yeah, it's definitely got that very cool Gary Glitterish drum thing happening in there.
Yeah, not unlike stuff I did with Joan.
Right, exactly. So the album's got a lot of really cool, varied guitar tones, sounds, you know, electric acoustic guitars, which one hopes for, as you are a great player, right? Another thing that I really like, and I hope I can phrase this right, is it's like with like Hank Williams songwriting. You know, the lyrics are very simple, very direct, and if you pull them outside of the context of the music and his inflection, the way he's singing things, they can seem they seem predictable and trite. And yet when they're in the context of how he's presenting them, you know, every couplet makes sense. You might even know what's coming next. It doesn't seem wrong. It seems absolutely right. And a lot of your songwriting, to me, just lyrics specifically, has that going on in these songs, just very direct, and it just seems to make a lot of sense. So you mentioned a moment ago that the music comes first. Tell me about writing, coming up the lyrics. Is that ever a struggle, or how do you approach that?
Oh man, it's always a struggle. It's like, you know, it's like wrestling with somebody bigger than you. So I start with the music. And I've always written like this. I start with the music and I start kind of mumbling along kind of like melodies, right?
Yeah.
To whatever the chords are. And it's funny because when I co-write, I'll send somebody something with my mumbling. Like I sent to like Willie Nile, who we co-wrote a song. And I send him this thing and I say, there's nothing. It's just mumbling, man. There's nothing on here. He says, no. That second thing you that was great. What was that? I'm like, I don't have a clue, man. I just was mumbling. You know? And then we'll have to find it. And every once in a while, there's a good line to start with. That's my key. Like if I can get that first line, even the title doesn't even have to come first. If I could just get that first line that draws you in, I'm on my way. And I, you know, you're sitting there looking at a blank piece of paper and it's like, oh boy, here we go again. And yeah, you do struggle, but as I've been writing songs a long time, I have a lot of people that I learn from, and I kind of follow the bouncing ball as far as writing. I try not to edit. Like I'll just write what's in my brain and then I will go back and start picking and choosing. Mm-hmm. And maybe, yeah, like you mentioned, like, that's a little trite. Let me try to word it. How else can I say that? You know, or I already said that in the first verse. Let me say something else in the second verse. But I definitely don't edit as I'm going. I kind of just let it free form. And then I go back and start picking at it. And that process can take, you know how it works, bro. You do the same thing. It's like, you could either write a song in 15 minutes or it can take like 2 weeks. You know, but I do know when it's time to get up and go watch some TV and then come back to it.
You're right. Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Willie Nile. So you guys wrote Recover Me together. Is that right?
Yeah. And I sent him, like, there were like two or three. I wanted to try to write most of this one on my own. And because I felt like Clean Getaway, I was really learning how to write in this genre of writing these lyrics. So you want it to be, like you said, to the point. You don't want it to be corny. You want it to be rock and roll. You want to use cool visuals, so mm-hmm. to speak, right?
Yeah.
I thought I had gotten a lot better since Clean Getaway, and that was pretty cool. So I said, okay, I'm going to try to force myself. Because it's very easy when you have great people around you. You just, yeah, give me a verse, you know? I wanted to force myself to do it myself. Mm-hmm. So it was Willie Nile. Wrote one. My pal Richie Supa, we wrote a song called I Come Back Stronger. Yeah. And then a great singer-songwriter in New York named Emily Duff. We wrote a song, I Ain't Gonna Live Like That, which is a cool bluesy number. And Willie Nile, I sent him, we actually wrote two songs. I want to fix a couple of the lines in the verse on the second one. The music is amazing and the melody and everything, but I wasn't happy. I thought there were too many words in the verses. Of course, Dylan would laugh at me, but no, there's not enough words. But so with Willie, I love Willie. You know, we've never really played together. We've done some events together. We're on the same kind of events because I don't know what happens out there on the West Coast. But there were all these cool events in New York where it's like glam night or soul night, you know, and I'm always asked to be part of these things and do a song.
Yeah.
So I got to be friends with Willie. I love his music. He's the greatest guy, just a sweetheart. And I wanted to write a song with him. So I sent him the music to Recover Me, which is just, you know, just a rock and roll tune. And he called me back in 5 minutes. He goes, Recover Me. I said, what? He says, that's the title, Recover Me. I'm like, okay. And then I went over to his pad in the village, in the West Village. He lives in a cool village apartment, a walk up. And he said, you know, it's a couple of flights, so you may want to stop halfway through. And he wasn't kidding. We sat on his couch and we knocked out two songs. And then I said, hey man, you want to come to the studio and sing it with me? We'll do like a rock and roll Sam and Dave thing. And he said, yeah. So he came out there and we did it together.
When we spoke a couple of years ago, you were performing at these treatment facilities, these recovery group meetings that you mentioned.
Yeah.
That's been really hard for you not being able to do that this year. Have you heard from any of these people? I mean, how are they?
Absolutely.
And how are they?
Oh, well, it's really, really rough right now as far as relapse.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of people. I mean, if you're already in recovery and you have a little time, you kind of, if you know what the next right thing to do is, you kind of have a group around you. Yeah. If you're one of those people that was just on the fence of maybe changing your life and then this kicked in, it just gives me the chills to think of what that was like. I mean, I could just imagine somebody sitting in their house in the middle of this thing in New York and, you know, when ambulances were going by every 5 minutes and convincing themselves they could go out to get a bottle of Jack Daniels or to go out and get some dry goods, even though you know that you shouldn't be going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you justify it. No, I'll be back in 10 minutes, you know. So, yes, the answer is the relapse rate is gone up quite a bit. And it's interesting because I've done about five or six events, mm-hmm. You know, different recovery events where I would have been there in person, like in Atlantic City, you know, an organization would throw an event and it would be like, you know, 2,000 people in a room or something. But that you could do through Zoom, right? But the treatment facility, my recovery music groups, it's not really feasible unless they had a big screen. I mean, I don't even know. The place I go to once a month, they said, no, we're not letting anybody in. So I don't even know how I would be able to sit in front of them and do a group unless they had a screen or something in the room, you know, and 60 people could sit in front of it or something. So that's been the thing that I've been kind of aching to go back to. And it will happen. You know, I just hope everybody, if you're hurting out there, man, reach out for help. I mean, there's a million and one community support groups on Zoom right now. I mean, I've been to those community support group meetings in LA, in New Zealand, you know, in England. You know what I'm saying? It's like you just Google it. Yeah. And you just put in whatever your poison is, you know, whatever it is, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is. And you go Zoom meetings and all these things come up and you find a time that's good for you. You download Zoom and it's been really helpful. And frankly, I have a lot of new friends from different parts of the world now, which is really cool.
That is very cool. So we mentioned off the album, our coolest song together and this tune you wrote with Willie specifically, Recover Me. And other great songs on there, like Pour Me. I love the line off there. Raise a glass to the dreams I drank away. Ain't Gonna Live Like That. I think that's the bluesy one. Who did you write that with? You mentioned a woman's name.
This great songwriter out of New York named Emily Duff. Now, that song I play in treatment. Like, I can't play every song in treatment. Like, together, yeah. I can't figure out how am I going to, like, bring that down to one acoustic guitar. I'm sure I'll do it eventually. But Ain't Gonna Live Like That. You could imagine, I mean, but there's like, you know, I get the gang to sing at the end. I ain't gonna live like that no more, no more. You could imagine I get like 60 people in treatment all singing that at once. And it's pretty moving. And what I did was when I was, you know, I'm also, I went to school 2 years ago to get certified as a drug and alcohol counselor and a recovery coach. I haven't worked at it much because of scheduling and also, you know, I'm doing 15 things at once.
Yeah.
But I did work at a great place in Staten Island called Christopher's Reason. And I worked there for a few months as a counselor. And I love it. And hopefully I'll get to do it again. But when it was time to do the gang vocals for I Ain't Gonna Live Like That, I actually called the clinical director and said, hey, can I get like 15 of the clients? Could you put them in a van and bring them out to the studio? And let's get them on the record, you know, just to show them that, wow, there's a way to have fun, clean and sober. So that when you hear those voices there, that's people actually from treatment.
Wow. Well, I want us to go out on a tune right now, Quitting Time, off of the new album, Sobering Times. How many times did you tell yourself it was quitting time before you quit? I mean, I have to imagine that was a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's why I put the little again in parentheses after quitting time.
All right. Yeah.
In the title. Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty across the board statement for anybody that has issues with addiction, whatever they are. It's like, this is the last one. Just one more. This is the last one. No, not going to do it anymore. This is it. I promise. I swear. And that particular tune, you know, it's humorous. It's got some good funny lines in there. And musically, I don't know how did I do it? I was, you know, I go through phases. Like, I wanted to use a lot of 12 string on this record.
Yeah.
I see things like Bob has all these great guitars sitting around the studio. Like, I bring mine, but then he said, oh, let me see that 12 string there for a second. And I just started playing that rhythm pattern. And I said, oh, this is kind of cool. And the lyrics just came pretty naturally. And that was the point I was trying to make. What was those first couple of lines in there? I ran with Tennessee Whiskey.
Right. And partner, I wanted to ask was that a real thing? You, the Tennessee Walking Whiskey with the cocaine?
Yeah, I would say that was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
I run with Tennessee Whiskey and its partner in crime, cocaine. One would light the fire while the other stoked the flame. You know, I mean, for me, it was like always.
There you go. I'm telling you, I love the song lyrics.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That means a lot to me, man. But that's the deal is that, you know, for me, it'd be like, it would start out with like a Heineken or two. And then, you know, I mean, I have that disease of addiction. Like, it's in my family, you know? So like you have one, it kind of unleashes that thing where it erases all the bad stuff that happened from the last time. And it tells you, well, this time it'll be different. So you have a Heineken or two, and then you go, give me a Jack straight up. And then, you know, after about three or four of those, it's like, let me make a phone call, you know? And that was pretty much my experience. Everybody's got a different one. And I just wanted to get, so there's pieces directly from my past. Yeah. And then there's stuff that I just, that's obvious, you know, but I was proud of those four lines. I was proud of.
So when you were first writing these songs that, you know, inspired from your addiction and working on recovery, was that difficult to open up or that came really easy?
It's been so long, that I felt that desperation.
Yeah.
You know, it's not to say that in recovery I haven't had moments of feeling blue and regretful of certain things, but I mean, I've never felt that despair from, you know, like that 5 o'clock in the morning despair, when you know, you don't know what to do next and you're just, the walls are closing in. But so I don't think, nothing's been, I wouldn't say it was like some sort of like therapy or anything. It's just, I have a lot to write about. And this whole thing started with the song Broken is a Place, which is from the Clean Getaway record. And that I wrote with Richie Supa. And I put that online. I recorded it, you know, quick, nothing fancy. And I put it online, as one would do these days. And I started getting reactions from people around the world saying, you told my story. And that's when, like, this light went over my head, the songwriting light. And I wrote a second one, you know, then I wrote a third, and then all of a sudden I had six. And that's when I reached out to a treatment facility that I had, you know, worked with some recovery events. And I said, how about if I came in with my acoustic and played to the clients? And I swear I had no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know how you do it in rock and roll, you just do it and then figure it out later.
Right.
And I went in there and I just got this really wonderful reaction from everybody that was sitting in front of me. And like I said, when we started, they said, how can we get this music to bring home when we leave treatment? And that's what brought me to do the records. And here we are. Now, I don't know what's coming up next, man. You know, I don't know if I'm gonna write a third. I'd like to do a blues record or something. Just a straight up rock and roll. I mean, I'm having trouble writing anything but this right now, but that's not a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, I figure it this way. If one person hears one song from this record and it helps them, then I've done my job.
Absolutely. Ricky, thanks again for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
I'm so excited to hear, sit in my car with the window. Well, it's a little cold now, and blast in Underground Garage and hearing Stephen announce this new coolest song in the world and hearing my music on the radio again. It's pretty cool. Even for somebody who's been around a long time, it's certainly a kick to hear your music on the radio, man. And this is Underground Garage is like my favorite station.
Oh, thanks, Ricky. Well, hey, and two, best wishes to you and yours over these upcoming holidays.
You as well. Be safe. And, you know, we all just have to be kind. Everybody's stressed to the max, man. So just try to be mindful and kind. We'll get through this.
Well, right now, we're headed to Quitting Time off Ricky Bird's new album, Sobering Times, here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
It sure would be something.
Quitting Time from Ricky Bird here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. That track is off the guitarist's latest solo album called Sobering Times. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Ricky for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Please join me here again next time when we'll hear from Morten Henriksen, the main creative force behind the long-running punk and power pop band from Norway called the Yum Yums. They've got a new album out now on Rumbar Records titled For Those About to Pop, and we'll find out all about it next time around on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.